Good morning, everyone. Today I want to talk to you about the PD cotton germplasm collection. Many of you that have been in the business for a while know much about the PD germplasm, and as part of this project I really dove in and learned a lot about the history of the collection, and I hope to present some of that to you today. So in a cotton breeding program, any cotton breeding program, we know that genetic resources and genetic diversity within those genetic resources are essential. And Pohlman said this in 1979, that genetic diversity must exist so that we can achieve genetic improvement. And also earlier in the 70s, many of you know Harlan and DeWitt published a paper where they talked about categorizing genetic resources using a gene pool methodology. So if we think about using this gene pool methodology, we have a primary gene pool, which represents the intraspecies, secondary, which is interspecies, and the tertiary gene pool, and beyond this kind of intergenera. And so in cotton, as many of the upland cotton breeders know, that we primarily emphasize genetic resources within species, within hirsutum. But when you look at the total gamut of genetic resources available in upland cotton, as many of you know, cultivated cotton primarily involves allotetraploids. There's 5 polyploid species, and of course we cultivate Gossypium hirsutum and Barbadense. There are also 45 diploid species available. Steve showed some nice slides in the previous talks of some of these, and they're difficult to work with because of hybridization barriers. And so with commercial breeding programs, as I said before, the primary emphasis is in the hirsutum gene pool. And so the PD germplasm collection is a good example of a collection that is useful to the Gossypium hirsutum breeders. So the PD cotton genetics program was initiated in Florence, South Carolina back in 1935. And Daryl Bowman and Osmond Gutierrez published a paper, I believe it's a Journal of Cotton Science, where they talked about different sources historically of fiber quality. And the PD program was emphasized in that report, in addition to the New Mexico Acala program, as being huge contributors of fiber quality in commercial cultivars, particularly fiber strength for the PD program. And so back in 1935, there were two real initial objectives of the program. First one was to improve yield, boll weevil resistance, and early maturity in sea island cotton. So it was there was a focus on developing Gossypium barbadense cultivars that were adapted to southeast U.S. But also the other main objective was to develop ELS upland cotton with sea island quality. Well, after probably 10 years, I suppose, the program realized that those two objectives were going to be really, really difficult. And there was not much success on developing a Barbadense cultivar adapted to the southeast U.S., but they did have some success in developing 2 ELS cultivars. And they were produced on a limited acreage for a few short years, and that's Sealand and Early Staple. And so in 1940, in that decade, the breeding objective really changed for the program, and that changed to developing upland cultivars with high yield and fiber strength. And that's really the breeding objective that's remained since the mid-1940s. And so about this time, maybe some of you in the audience were around during this time, the Beasley triple hybrid was produced, and as many of you know, this was a great success. But in reading the history of this, I thought it was really a neat achievement because what happened, this Beasley triple hybrid was developed and Kerr was working on it and at North Carolina State, I believe. And at the time, the PD program was headed by DC Harrell and Tom Culp was coming on board. And actually, Kerr transferred pollen of the Beasley triple hybrid to many programs, including the PD program. So there was a real spirit of collaboration back during that time. So DC Harrell and Tom Culp used pollen from two triple hybrid lines, TH108 and 171, and pollinated several different lines, Hopi Acala, Sealand, and Early Staple, to develop what was really the progenitors of the upland PD program as we know it today, and they called these the FJAN progenitor lines. And I think Steve Calhoun worked on a publication from Mississippi State during his time there, and they nicely describe what the FJAN stand for. So they had these FJAN lines at that time, and they began to deploy multiple breeding strategies, different breeding strategies, using those lines and then commercial cultivars and other germplasm available at the time. And they had already recognized that there was an unfavorable linkage between yield and fiber strength, something that has been a challenge, continued challenge. So some of the multiple breeding strategies that were employed was they, of course, they used pedigree selection with early generation selection, which is primarily what we still use today, random intermating, a modified back crossing procedure, and composite crossing. And Culp and Harrell actually published a paper in Crop Science in 1973 where they describe a lot of this information. And at the time, they concluded that pedigree selection with early generation selection was probably the most favorable method to use to break the unfavorable linkage between fiber strength and lint yield. So here's where we get to the point of this actual project. Based on this real unique history of the PD program, my hypothesis was that moderate genetic diversity likely exists in the PD germplasm collection because of the diversity used to develop these lines. And so the objective was really to categorize the PD germplasm resources, and nowadays we have molecular markers at our disposal to help us in this characterization. But I also split this project into characterizing the phenotypic field performance of these materials. So what we did was we selected 82 genotypes from the PD collection that represented released germplasm lines and varieties. We tried to select these lines so that they were pedigree representative across the entire collection and also historically representative lines. So in terms of the molecular characterization, these 82 PD lines, we extracted DNA from young leaf tissues and we used microsatellite markers to go at this, and our goal was two markers per chromosome arm for 104 total markers. We used a PCR and polyacrylamide system, and we scored bands as either present or absent. So for our field or phenomic characterization, since we're in the omic age in plant genetics research, we conducted field trials, and for this experiment, or for this paper today, I'm only focusing on 3 years of data collected at Florence, South Carolina, but this was a larger evaluation trial. We have multi-year, multi-location data outside of this, but I'm only going to focus on the Florence data. We included 2 to 6 Czech cultivars in this test and used incomplete block design with 4 replicates, 2-row plots. This was a very big test. And of course, the traits we measured were lint percent, lint yield, the standard HVI traits. We also have aphis data, and I'm going to share some fineness data. We did our analysis variance and calculated our least mean squares for all of these traits. So briefly, for the genetic diversity estimation, we used a computer program called NTSYS to construct dendrograms to give us a visual estimation of the genetic relationships based on both molecular markers and each of the different phenotypic traits. And I'm not going to go into the details of this computer program, but we'll get right to the data. Now, I don't expect each of you to actually read this dendrogram, but this is the kind of output you get when we look at the genetic diversity. This is a dendrogram based on molecular marker data, and over here, although you can't read on the right side, they are all the PD lines, and the genetic similarity is on the x-axis there. So the greater the line going towards the left on the x-axis, the less the genetic similarity. So essentially what we were able to do is get a visual estimation of the diversity here, and we actually formed subgroups and groups within this dendrogram to kind of classify or characterize the germplasm resources. We also did this for each of the phenotypic traits. Some doing this type of work in other crops and in the literature have used principal component analysis to form a dendrogram of looking at all the traits at once, but that we decided to leave these and analyze them by trait, because you run into autocorrelation issues because many of these traits are highly correlated. But anyway, the dendrogram allowed us to again form clusters and subclusters of lines, and I've included the mean value for those subclusters in parentheses here. And so we see the same sort of thing for lint yield, for fiber strength, for fiber length, for fiber fineness. And I will get to how I'm going to use the enormous amount of data that's present in those dendrograms. But one of the things we also wanted to do is use some statistics to look at the correlation, or see if there's any correlation between the different genetic similarity estimates derived from molecular markers, lint percent, lint yield, and so forth. And essentially what we found was, not unexpectedly, there was really no significant correlation between how the lines broke out with molecular markers and with the phenotypic traits, although there was statistically significant correlation with fiber length and strength. However, as we would expect, several of the agronomic traits, the way the lines were categorized based on those data sets, did show some positive correlations with one another. And I'll just mention the negative correlation, the negative value here comes from you're correlating a similarity matrix with a dissimilarity matrix. The agronomic traits were based on a dissimilarity matrix. So overall, with the molecular analysis, what we found was we had a range of genetic similarity going from 0.64 to 0.96. And if you go into the literature, there's a lot of information available, a lot of papers published in this area. And this range is within the general reported range of diversity, other diversity studies, although it's lower than the high similarity reported in a few studies out of Gerald Meyer's lab and Ping Chi's lab. And of course, your diversity estimates are going to depend on the germplasm you survey, so that's an easy way to understand why there might be differences. But what's interesting, The genetic similarities that we found in this study are quite similar to what Jinfa Zhang at New Mexico State University found in the New Mexico Acala germplasm collection. And what's interesting about that is if you compare the history of both of those germplasm programs are quite similar. The triple hybrid germplasm was used quite extensively in the New Mexico Acala germplasm collection as well. So it's not surprising that both of these small collections of upland cotton germplasm are quite diverse. So, of course, in the phenomics data, what I wanted to do was just simply today show a comparison of the PD lines in general to the low check for each trait and the high trait for each trait for each check. So for lint percent and lint yield, you can see that the PD germplasm was equal to the low check, but not really better than the low check. So there's a yield deficiency and lint percent deficiency in the PD germplasm. Many of you that have worked with this germplasm already knew that. But of course, in terms of fiber traits, the PD germplasm looks quite nice compared to the low check here. Most of them are better than the low check here, and that's a commercially grown cultivar. When compared to the high check, of course, the PD germplasm is deficient for lint yield and lint percent, but for the fiber traits presented here, PD germplasm in general are equal to the high check, and several lines are better than the high check, particularly for fiber fineness. So in conclusion, based on our molecular diversity data, it does appear that moderate genetic diversity exists within the PD germplasm collection. And I think that can be attributed to the alternative breeding methods that were employed early in the breeding program, that they really maintain the diversity that we found with this survey. Many PD germplasm outperform commercial cultivars for fiber quality, and I'm going to suggest that the dendrograms that I presented here can provide a nice parental line selection tool that a breeder can use using genomic and phenomic data. And I'm just going to provide a real short and quick lint yield example. If I take the dendrogram for lint yield here, the first thing I'd want to do is select the highest yielding subcluster from the lint yield dendrogram, and I've circled that in red. So I take those lines that were in that subcluster from the lint yield dendrogram, and I look at the marker-based diversity in my molecular marker dendrogram. And those lines fall out here as they're circled in red. So the next step is to actually design the cross using this genomic and phenomic data. So I've blown up the lint yield subgroup here and highlighted that the mean of that subgroup was about 1400 kilograms per hectare. And I can look at these three lines and see what marker subgroup that they fall in. And of course, if the mantra is that breeders should cross the most diverse lines that have good adaptation and good values for the traits they're interested in. So I can design diverse good by good crosses by designing crosses from the most divergent marker subgroups from the marker dendrogram. And those two crosses are designed here. But of course, that's all speculative. We don't really know if crossing the most diverse lines will in fact give us the best opportunity to recover a better line than either one of the two parents. So in the future, I think this clearly shows that future research should test that hypothesis that hybridizing genetically diverse parents has the highest probability of generating new and favorable allele combinations. So with that, I want to acknowledge USDA ARS, my employer, Cotton Incorporated sponsored part of this project, and also Clemson University supplies laboratory and field space for my program. Thank you.